very pleased to welcome all of you this evening to a lecture shiur by Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein on the subject Da'as Torah, Religious Imperative or Good Advice. All of us know Rabbi Lichtenstein is an outstanding Rosh Yeshiva, as a first-rate creative Jewish thinker, and as a leading Manhig Yisrael. His name itself represents for us the highest achievements in Jewish learning and in Jewish scholarship, and in keeping with the rabbinic principle of Gadol Meirabon Shmo, it is a great, great privilege, kavod, an honor for me and for all of us to host this evening and to present to you Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein.
Asked to address yourself this evening is, in one sense, a specific issue. In other sense, it's part of a broader issue and to be seen, I think, against its background. The broader issue, which I think is in context, ambience, is a more specific matter that I've been asked to discuss, has to do with the gut response. Speaking here not of one's theoretical construct, but how one responds and relates almost intuitively and instinctively to authority generally and to halachic or religious authority particularly. There are people, groups, segments of the community to whom authority, as both an abstract concept and human reality, is a wholly unmixed blessing. On one plane, then, Gadol, Tzaddik, independently considered, as a veritable pillar from the cosmic order in a mystical vein, or as ambient society in purely rational terms. The Gadol, the Tzaddik, enhances and ennobles his world by bringing it into contact with levels of wisdom, saintliness, which are otherwise not wholly beyond its purview. Then the second plane, that of the individual's relation to a spiritual mentor, the authority of Gedolim for some is not only accepted but relished. They are regarded need experience. It's both fountains of wisdom and towers of strength. There's a dual guidance, illuminating as well as inspiring. And to people for whom this is the fundamental mindset, and I repeat, it's more than a mindset, it's a gut response, seems self-evident. Where could one receive more definitive counsel, better definitive counsel than from those of whom the Pasuk says, Sod Hashem Yireyo, Mitolo Hodiya, secret, Benishloilam is for those that revere him, and his covenant to make them know it. And who radiates power and generates uplift more than those of whom Chazal say, Yolim Tzadikim Yateh Malachi Asharek. And again, for a certain kind of sensibility, the exercise and acceptance of authority per se is reassuring. Apart from the comforting knowledge that ex-cathedra pronouncements are provided often in counsel, there's the gratification for the individual of relief of the burden of having to make decisions. At the very least, submissive embrace of authority both spares the possible agonies of the process of choice and produces the sense that whatever the consequences, one cannot personally be held liable for them. Beyond that, there are some strange, it seems, to people of different ilk, even luxuriant, to be literally problematic contemplation of the of their abnegation of self, capacity for judgment, as a fulfillment, a different form, of course, mitantis mitantis, of the mandate of the Mishnah, batel ritzoncha b'tnei ritzono, set aside your will in favor of his. Others, however, are fundamentally far more circumspect, not indeed ambiguous. Regard authority again as both concept and reality, both the expected and yet the jaundiced eye. On the one hand, they recognize, both as a matter of a prior and inherent necessity, in light of relevant sources, that authority and submission to it is critical. They know they cannot, to a certain extent, may not make decisions in designated areas. And yet, it's something they accept with a certain sense of reluctance, with a feeling that somehow their own self is being bent submissively, when intuitively they prefer to stand 10 feet tall. They sense that in some way, in some sense, inner selves are compromised, their autonomy has been constricted. Lacking a geographic orientation, they generally hold even the G'dolim to whom they relate as being, as it were, of theirs, their camp, in less awe than the former hold their. There, there would still be some kind of a reluctance on both personal and philosophic grounds to seek or even accept counsel. So, we have, as I've suggested, two very different basic orientations, mindsets, gut feelings and responses with regard to the broader relation to authority. In any event, even in areas where unquestionably it needs to be accepted. This forms, as I mentioned at the outset, a kind of background, a context within which a more specific issue needs to be surveyed. And this is the issue of the application of authority as a concept, force, to certain areas which do not self-evidently come under the rubric shailos, which need to be decided in purely halachic, not on normative terms, a lot of relevant texts and certain categories. And the question arises as to what kind of areas, kind of problems, concerns, personal or communal, are part of that Torah to which Das Torah is to be applied. So we need to grapple first with the definition, what comes within the ambience of the psak or decision, some kind of thoughtful statement. This is one question. Secondly, of course, regardless of which areas it's been included, but who are the personages whose dots, whose individually expressed opinion, or whose consensual view, somebody regarded as an authoritative das tale. particular issue is, strictly speaking, a Torah matter, and that certain individuals or a certain group, a certain forum, is authorized to speak in the name of Torah with respect to Torah, only then can we develop some kind of concept that does Torah something which is imperative, something which we must fundamentally accept. Addressing ourselves to this question that formulated for me is whether the concept of Das Torah is a religious imperative or simply good advice. We need at the outset to bear in mind whether we understand and speak of an imperative. Perhaps also what we understand by good advice, and that I'll get later. Let's first start with the question, what do we understand by imperative? I think we need to differentiate between two basic senses in which we use the term and can't use the term. One is the thinking of a normative imperative. The chiyuv, the halach, that person X, Y, or Z says something regardless of the area, that must be accepted as a chiyuv. That the Novi, the Torah says, Erav Tishma'un, to eat his cows, you have to listen to him. And in areas of Psak, Aloch, strictly speaking, was Beholov, was a Tlaibis. There, again, we know that Psak needs to be accepted. This is a sense in which Shmuel, that we speak, and the same can be said regard to other areas, personal anhogir, establishing priorities, social, political, communal matters, is the element of the imperative. This is one of the normative aspects. But we can say it's imperative to do something not necessarily speaking in normative terms, which means not that it is normatively binding, but that it is necessary, that it is essential, perhaps even that it is critical, if you want to attain a certain end. Now, maybe if you don't want to attain that end, that you can forego. You are not bound to accept it. Something, it's a certain issue. But say that it's imperative, this must be done, in this sense that this is an essential means in order to attain something. It's valuable and necessary. And asking ourselves what this concept does, Torah, what extent that which God will say in regard to certain, say, particularly public issues, to what extent must we follow that? That must needs to be variously understood. Are we mechuyev? Or say that it's essential, it's necessary, it must be done if we wish to attain a certain thing. Let me start first with examining the normative aspect. Same man as mechuyev to listen to the Novi, Elof Tishmo, or to accept Psak as Nagodu, or Tasur, etc. Is there such a halacha here as well? And the question here is dual. Is one obligated to seek counsel? And secondly, even if he has not sought it, is he under obligation to accept it when there is a proffer? In certain contexts, of course, we can find that deal with the seat of authority, of halachic authority, the best nagadol, we find that it is involved in certain areas which narrowly defined are certainly political areas. The Mishnah says in Sanhedrin that Melech civil authority wants to go to war, and it is not one which is absolutely predicated by certain halachic categories. It's not a mechemet mitzvah, mechemet chovas, and shomrov zayin amanim. It's not a strictly defensive response, but it's a mechemet of shul, which of course is not meant simply some fickle folly on the part of the melech, but perhaps a preventive war, perhaps something which for which some justification could be provided, but it is not absolutely thrust upon us by Allah. So, Mimotzin Mechemet of Shul, LLP Beit Yishayahu, not the best Nagon, with supreme source of halachic authority, there cannot be any initiative for Mechemet of Shul. And conceivably, one might extrapolate from Mechemet of Shul to other forms, other areas of Mishul. Economy of Rishut, policy of Rishut, social policy of Rishut. But let us recognize that this is a fairly extensive extrapolation. This for two reasons. Number one, we're dealing here, of course, with a particularly sensitive and critical area. It's a question of bloodshed, bloodshed on both sides, the fear and the concern, both Shelo Yarov, Shelo Yarei. One cannot readily infer from here to other less critical and also less morally problematic areas. Secondly, the role of Melech here is somewhat, somewhat similar to that which we have in this country, Abdul, and some advice and consent, the right to have some kind of veto, regard to the procedure, but not to initiate it, most to serve as a restraining, as an inhibiting factor, and to move from there to assume that since Bez Nagon has this function, that indeed is to be, generally speaking, the arbiter of civil policy, this is a very far jump, and one which I think we ought not, on the basis of this, Mishnah alone make. But let us look beyond the Mishnah to the sources of authority of Bez Nagodl. For the time being, I limit myself to Bez Nagodl. We have to deal with the issue first with regard to them. If one finds that in relation to Bez Nagodl, the concept does not fully hold, Allah has come over Chama with regard to lesser and later authorities, but find that it does so, then the question, of course, of what I'm slated successively is to be considered. Look in the parasha which delineates the authority of Bez Nagodl. There says, "Tipalei mimcha davar la-mishpat, v'indam ledam, din ledin, ve'nega la'nega, ve'rivot misha'arecha, kanta ve'alit el ha'makom ha'shifrar Hashem alakech ha'bo. Ve'ata la'kohalim ha'lvi'im el'ashofet ha'shem ha'yemim ha'ein, ve'rashta ve'gidu l'cha ha'dvar ha'mishpat, ve'asita al'pi ha'davar ש'yagidu l'cha min ha'makom ha'ru ha'shifrar Hashem, ve'shamarta la'asot ככל אשר יורוך, על'pi ha'torah אשר יורוך, ועל המשפט אשר יאמרו לך תעשה, לא תסור מן הדבר שיגידו לך ימין ושמאל." If some matter distant from you, escape you, you will be able some other puzzle, figure it out. In the course of judgment, deciding between blood and blood, between one contention and another, or between different plagues and fevers, matters within your community of contention. So then the Torah says, go up to the place which the Hashem has chosen, and come there, to the Kohanim, Alevim, this is the best Nagodl, and the judge who will be there at the time, and you then will inquire, present the situation, they will tell you what the halacha is. And then the Torah says, you shall and the judgment which they will hand down to you. You shall act. You shall not deviate from that which they tell you, right or left. Now this is the law of the Sosu, quoted the Gemara in a number of contexts, with respect to his rage, the Rambam and the Ramban, the great Machlokes. The law that enjoins us to act in accordance with the dictates of the Beis HaKohen and proscribes any deviation therefrom. But we take note that when the Torah prefaces this parsha, it tells us what are the kinds of issues that to come under this rubric. Bein dam ledam, Rashi explains based on the Gemara Sanhedrin, bein dam tamei ledam tahor, some forms, some colors of matters of blood, umei siya tamei, others are tahor. Bein din ledin, it's a question as to whether a person in a particular litigation or trial, is innocent or guilty, is won or lost. Be'nega lo nega, to those that are pure and impure, halachic issues, pure and simple, in the narrowest, strictest sense of the term. And certainly the presumption is that halachic b'sasu, iso, not to accept that which the Beis HaKohen says, or chachma yaseh will say, is confined to issues of this kind. Asa b'cholo, libis, yezlo, chavin zematz, shabbos, these areas. However, we need to bear in mind a second source as well. Pasuk in Hazinu, says, Chol Yemot Olam, Binu Shemot Do Vado, Sh'al Avicha V'yagedecha, Zekeinecha V'yodamunach. Remember the days of yore, peer into, consider the years of various generations, ask your father and he will tell you, explain to you, your elders, and they will tell. Now, within the context of the parsha, of course, one takes this to refer to some general explanation of historical development, historiography. As the Torah goes on to explain how Knesset Yisrael has been selected, its place among the nations, etc., etc. In this context, of course, one cannot think in normative terms. For a person to go and ask his father, his grandfather, his elder, the previous generations, we should study history with him. But the Gemara Shabbos does give a somewhat normative coloring to this pasuk. The Gemara there asks, not long ago we Chanukah. The Gemara there asks, we make a bracha on Chanukah. Shabbos is done to see the Chanukah. We make a bracha with regard to the Rabbanon, Tzivon, Echan Tzivon, where we be commanded about Chanukah. One of the quotes to Pesukim, one of them says, Lo Tasu, meaning that it's true that the Torah always speaks of Chanukah, but inasmuch as given the Chachamim the mandate to be the Misaka, this is the Rabbanon, so derivatively, whatever the Chachamim, whatever meets the Chachamim Misaka, that obligates us, and therefore we can say with Tzivanu indirectly. This is one marker. And what's another marker? Sh'ala v'icha v'yakeidcha. Zekenecha v'yakeidcha. Meaning that the Gemara takes that to refer not only to what we have in the parsha, that elders, zekenecha refers to Bezdin, that they should instruct us about historical development, the nature of society and community, Klal Yisrael, Yisrael, etc., etc. But this is also a source Saka to charge us in a certain sense. Now, the significance of this pasuk is that here you have a kind of conjunction of two elements. On the one hand, the pasuk clearly is not confined to purely halachic issues, as we see from what follows. Etc. So clearly it refers to a whole range of matters. On the other hand, in terms of the import of the pasuk, simply offer us sound advice, or does it impose upon us that we need and must do this? So light of the Mamei Shabbos. According to that Madonna who says that the Mokya Pechon Sivonu who's got the Mises the Rabbanon, the Shalom Yichav Yageidcha, clearly the Pasuk suggests is to be understood in normative terms. Certainly when it got to Mechanike, even according to the second Madonna, a person cannot say one Chanike is good advice. I want to have a good time. I want to have a Mechanike. So light of this pasuk, within which, on one hand, the normative aspect, the wants of absolute obligation, seems to be present. And yet, within the context of the parsha, the pasuk clearly matters other than what we would define to be narrowly halachic matters to be included. One might then conclude, Shalom Yichav Yageidcha, and you listen to what he says, as you listen to the Gata Nechanike, even what he's telling you about is not Nechanike, but by the Chelo Goyim, Goyim, do this, do that, etc. Now, this is not absolutely binding kind of truth, admittedly, because it rests upon somehow the hybrid combination of two aspects. Mother's reference to Kerry's halacha on the one end and the implication of the parsha on the other. But it does seem to suggest that over here, what Avicha and Zekenecha have to say, then there is force to what they say, and one can certainly argue, based on this pasuk, that the force is absolutely mandatory. It should be emphasized, however, that if this is the makir, Shalom Yichav Yageidecha, as opposed to Isasu, there are certain significant implications for the degree of normative obligation, even if one assumes that it exists. And this is with respect to a very critical matter, which is of great importance in other respects as well, but which has clear implications for our own topic. The parsha of Lotasu, there the Torah says, "Lotasu et Roshe Yidu l'chayamim u'smol." Shall not deviate to the right or left. Now, with regard to this pasuk Yamin u'smol, we have a machlekes between the Yerushalmi on the one hand and the Sifri, which Rashi quotes on the other. The Yerushalmi says that Lotasu et Roshe Yidu l'chayamim u'smol. They tell you, but right that it's right, and left that it's left. But should you imagine, do you think that even if they tell you wrongly, that you must submit to authority just because authority has spoken, even when, in terms of your perception, is patently an error? Yachol, afilam, imlechal, yamin, shesmol, smol, shu, yamin. Talmudayma, not only if they said yamin is small, yamin, shu, yamin, smol, shu, small. Sifri, on the other hand, which Rashi quotes, says, Filu, even if they tell you I'll smoke Shu Yamim, I mean Shu smoke, at least through your subjective perception, it seems that they've totally reversed things at the most fundamental level. Nevertheless, the principle is that there is an authority, its voice needs to be heeded, it has absolutely mandatory power, and thence, set aside whatever your own perceptions are. The contradiction between the two choruses matter discussed in its own right. And the implications for the balance between authority and individual judgment in critical matter in any respect, certainly the implications are clear. But I don't address myself to that right now. What I do want to emphasize is that this is in the parsha of Lo Tasu. The parsha Shalom Yichav Yagedach Yisikerecha V'yom Ruach. There, this element does not come. So we're one to contend that the notion of the Das Torah is grounded in the Pasuk of Tasu on the theory that the requirement to listen to that which Shofet has to tell you, as the Rebbe tells you, Be'ini Vahey, this applies to a davar shiyagidu lachom, regardless of which davar it is, whether it's bein dam ledam, or between one social policy and another. If we were to base kasta das tera on esosu, then it would apply, and again, for the moment, kifari is the best davar. It would apply even when one is thoroughly convinced, according to his own lights, that they're absolutely categorically here. If it's only shalom yichur yigidchus kidechem yom shok, then you are told to pay a heedful ear, listen to their counsel, accept it. That may very well be limited to situations in which you don't have cause to think that what you're being told is thoroughly in error. But you don't know one way or the other. You don't have the capacity for judgment. You have no, maybe you have an inclination in a certain direction, but not conviction. Should there be conviction, then that possibility, at any rate, does not impose a standard of submission to authority, which emerges in the pasuk of Loisos. As indicated previously, of course, even if we're dealing with the pasuk of Shalom Ichav, still the question arises, fine, Shalom Ichav Yagedu. And let us assume that this applies not only to questions of halacha narrowly defined, parsha Hazinu includes other elements, but presumably even that extended scope that which you ask of Yichor, that which he tells you, that still may have certain limits. I discussed with you in the parasha Dache Ashbok, ways of providence, the development of Klal Yisrael, how history in general and Jewish history in particular is to be conceived. These are matters of clear spiritual import, part of filling us in nature of the world within which we live, the nature of the nation of its relation to the world. That can be understood. But how far afield the range of Shalom Ichav Yayetu extends, that question nevertheless obtains. And it's one which to which the Baal HaTanya, without reference to the whole pasuk, but perhaps hinting at it, addresses himself in Gerat HaKodesh. He asks a certain question about a given matter. And he responds, Avuvai, Achai v'Re'ai, Be'ahava mesuteret tochacha megula. L'chuna v'nivachecha, zichu yemot olam, binu shnot dov odov. והייתה כזאת ללמוד עולם, והיה איפה מצטם מנהג זה, באחד, באחד, מכל ספרי חכמי ישראל, הראשונים והאחרונים, להיות מנהג ותיקון, לשאול בעצה גשמיות, כדעת מה לעשות, בגלל העולם הגשמי, אף לגדולי חכמי ישראל הראשונים, כתנאים ואמוראים, אשר כל רז לא אנס לו, ונהיר אלוהו שבילי דרקיה, כי אם נביאים ממש, אשר היו לפעמים בישראל כשרואה לרואה, אשר הלך אליו שאול לדרוש אשר בדבר העתונות שנעבדו, שנעבדו להביא, כי באמת, כל ענייני אדם, לבד מדברי ספרי תורה ויראת שמיים אינם מושגים רק בנבואה, לא חכמים לחם, כמאמרם, כמאמר רבותינו ז"ל, הכל בידי שמיים חוץ מיראת שמיים. Beloved ones, friends and colleagues, out of my hidden love to you comes an outspoken, expressed castigation. Let us go and debate. Remember the days of yore, investigate the years of various generations. From time immemorial, has ever anything been like this? And where or where we found this kind of custom? In what books, great sages, Klal Yisrael, early, late, should be some kind of mode, a custom, to inquire, seek practical counsel, respect how one should conduct himself with respect to the mundane or the material world, even of the greatest Chachma Yisrael, of all Tanoim, Ameroim, from whom no secret was hidden, and to whom even the ways of heaven were perfectly clear. Exception, prophets literally, such as they were in Israel at one time, such as for instance Shmuel, of whom Shaul went to inquire about his father's asses that had gotten lost. Or indeed, other human matters, the exception of matters of Teva and Yirat Shamayim, these are grasped only in prophecy, and wise men, Chachamim, respect to this, have no special place in literature uses prayer. And that, of course, is a fairly sweeping statement, and one which I presume rests on the assumption, Inshallah, Vichor, Yagecha, is to try to get information, counsel, guidance, but not about material matters. You want to know about Achel Yogoyim? What happened in my celebrations? What happened? You got me the not inquire. If you want an answer, do this, do that, this policy, that policy. Do compromise, don't compromise. Lola Chachamina. But of course, within the text of the Baal HaTanya, there is a catch. Well, maybe not a catch, but a hope. Says that באמת כל ענייני אדם לבד בדברי תורה ויראת שמיים אינם מושגים רק בנבואה ולא לחכמים לכם. So matters of Torah and Yirat Shamayim, these, he says, are within the purview of Chachamim and counsels to be sought of them with regard to them. Well, this naturally opens up the question, so what's to be defined as a matter of Torah and Yirat Shamayim? Things which are Gashmi is material matters, not. But Yirat Shamayim, yes. And obviously, Tzeisa Mekatzi, one can define it narrowly or rather broad. Those of celebrant story, the other Tzeisa Salanto, who got married naturally for his wife, according to the one Bob Mitzir, he would take him in. His authority would count for Milid Yishmaya for heavenly matters, and hers and Milid Avet. Then came Friday night, and she started, Friday, she started preparing for Shabbos. He went to the kitchen, I got to tell her, I can do this, make this, make that. And she said, what? Says, Milid Yishmaya. I bring Milid Avet. He said, wait, Milid Avet? That's to be on Shabbos, that's Milid Yishmaya. And assisted her to have some input. But this is not, of course, simply a laughing matter. From a Shkafic point of view, indeed, there's much to be said for a very significant extension and expansion of the concept of Yirat Shamayim. After all, whatever a person does can have direct implications for Yirat Shamayim, and what he doesn't do has implications. Because every action that a person takes at any given time competes with all the other alternatives. But to choose A over B, C, C, D, E, also has implications. Rabbi Bechayim, Chavis Alvavis, speaks of this extensively. And of course, the celebrated statement of Rambam's Metshuvah. Rambam was asked about this maimer that the Balatanya quotes, according to Shemayim Chusim Yirat Shemayim. So, he asked someone about this, and then the Rambam says, V'chol, they want a tshuva, V'chol ma'asei b'nei ha'adam, b'chlad yirat shemayim he, V'sof, kol davar v'davar b'ma'asei b'nei ha'adam, ba lidei mitzvah o avera. V'ze she'amru rabotenu, hakol b'idei shemayim, b'minago shel olam v'toldotav v'tivo, כל מיני אילנות וחיות ונפשות ומדות וגלגלים ומלאכים, הכל בידי שמיים. Whatever a person does, that is subsumed, says the Rambam of Yirat Shemayim. Every action, ultimately, is part of a certain chain, or I suppose also, by way of regarding alternatives, ultimately brings one either to a mitzvah or to an aveir. So what is left for Hakol Bidei Shemayim, if all of this is Yirat Shemayim, which is beyond the purview of Shemayim? So that the Rambam says refers to what happens in the natural order, in the human order, the historical order. This is Hakol Bidei Shemayim. One of many statements, of course, in the Rambam, the assertion of the centrality of human freedom within his Hashkafa. So, even accepting the Baal HaTanya's qualification, it's still, it is arguable that Yirat Shemayim can refer to many areas. And that, I think, is a valid contention. But still, the qualification of Baal HaTanya, I presume, in the context of what he's talking about, does not define Yirat Shemayim what the Rambam does. He says that a great deal of what a person does, he should decide for himself, he should run to the Rebbe, he should run to the Rav. So in some sense, there is a significant limitation within the statement of the Baal HaTanya. Now, that limitation presumably applies even if one is dealing with halachic authority, religious authority, at its highest level. It says, Kanoi, Mameroi, the only thing that he exempts and accepts is Nevuah. And if so, even with regard to Bez Nagodl, there is some limitation of the area with respect to which it needs to be consulted, its counsel needs to be heeded. Halachas kama v'chama, subsequently. For if we're dealing with what happens subsequently, then of course a new issue arises. I mentioned before the position that there is a Das Taylor, or this may answer, or that may answer, which needs to be accepted normatively, rests on the assumption, after all, one is dealing with not necessarily theological issues, all discussion relates to other issues, the assumption that A, these matters are Torah matters, and secondly, that these personages qualify for the status of the halachic authority which needs to be accepted. But the extent to which subsequent halachic authority needs to be accepted, at least at the level of Bez Nagodl, is of course a matter of debate. The law of Lo Tasu, to whom does that apply? Does it apply only to Bez Nagodl? Perhaps only to Bez Nagodl? Well, in a sitting qua Bez Nagodl, only B'mikdash? Or does it apply the Deiris, to some kind of consensus of Chachmei Yisrael as well? This is with regard to the Lahav, and with regard to the Asay, see the Kodesh Yeruha, here again. And with now this issue has been discussed. The Chinuch says that Sasu, he says it more explicitly with God, the Situ Chodesh Yeruha, but the inclination is clear, it applies to the Sosim as well. That applies to Chachmei Yisrael and the Reseim as well. In reference to the Rambam, there have been different views in amongst Achronim as to what the Rambam sheet is. The Rav Zecharon of Rav assumes clearly that the Tosfos does apply to Deiris based on the Rambam's Akdome, this is the impression conveyed by the Sefer HaMitzvos. Chayes and others assumed, based on the Mishnah Torah, that the Tosfos does not apply. And if one takes the Parsha, again, strictly defined, the Tosfos is the Parsha Lechuve, is that it does not apply to other later Bateidin, but only to Bez Nagodol, with its own special unique authorities, the Sanhedrin. However, here again, we need to address ourselves to the distinction, the possible distinction that I suggested earlier. I mentioned before that there are two sources for the authority of Chachmei Avosayim. One being the Lava Letasuf, the other, Shalavicha V'Yageita. Even if one assumes that Lesasu does not apply beyond Bez Nagodol, but I think that both the Pashas and the Pamshe and logic would dictate that Shalavicha V'Yageitcha, that should apply. However, I repeat what I mentioned before, that if this be the source of Adon Lesasu, then the scope may be somewhat more limited, either with regard to the kind of issues or with regard to the circumstances under which that applies, to wit, that if a person is convinced that a small shul yamir, yamishu is small, then here the shalom yichu v'yageitcha may very well not apply. Now, we've dealt until here with the substantive aspect of the obligation to accept based on the authority with which the Torah has invested either Bez Nagodol or Chachmei Yisrael generally. For some, this per se is the basis for this doctrine of the so-called Das Torah, notion that authority of Chachmei Yisrael clearly at any given time, particularly for this dealing with the consensus, it's absolutely normative. It's imperative that be accepted with virtually no differentiation between issues that we recognize as being midam ledam narrowly halachic and those that are, if we will, the very voti sharech in a broader sense, matters of public policy at that level. However, there are some who contend, even if one does not fully accept this argument, and one recognizes that there is some distinction between Dvar Mitzvah and Dvar Rishus, between narrow halachic issues and matters of policy, if you will. But nevertheless, there is a significant reason for going along with the notion of Das Torah from a very different perspective. And this is the chiyuv kavod. The person is mechuyev, the mechabeh, tamid hachachamim. Two sources for this. It's Hashem HaMekech HaTira, so an extension of that, the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva Darsh, the Rabbi is tamid hachachamim. It's Meir of tamid hachachamim. And secondly, comes to Rabbo and Schibur talks about this, and Rama and Markei, that Tamid HaChomim being particularly Rabbi, a kind of spiritual father, so the Chiyuv of Kibud Avei applies to the spiritual father as well. Although that may apply only to Rabbi and not to others. And the contention is often advanced that a person to ignore either by failing to consult them or by disregarding their advice, that one not only is not being mechabed Torah, but is being mevasa, absolutely embarrasses them, denigrates them. Now this notion of kavod haTorah, in some sense, it's also part of the parsha of Betosu, the parsha of Zakin Mamre, the Keter subsequent, that says, what if there's someone who refuses to heed what they say, so this is rather very grievously, it's punishable. And it would appear from the Gemara Sanhedrin that one aspect of this, at least, is the aspect of the Mechabed Torah, the Mechabed Chacham. So the Gemara there raises a question as to whether if Beis Din wants to remit the Zaken Mamre, they want to be Meichel in the Kovet. So it's true, it really shamed us, it didn't listen to us, but we're large, we're not going to insist upon our honor. So the discussion in the Gemara is whether Kveda Bahu, and the Gemara's initial instinct is that indeed that should be the case. But then the Gemara says, no, in Kveda Bahu, Kadesh Reibun Achlakot Be Yisrael. It's part of being generous. But still, this undercuts the authority of Bezna Gonel. And the result is some kind of halachic chaos, whereby in a state of legal anarchy, this will pass like this, pass like that, and then we want to avoid. But clearly the element of COVID is a significant one within the context of the parsha. That was the Gemara's initial response. And this can be taken as an extension or perhaps a specific application of the concept of Kveid Tamid Chachomim. And hence it's arguable that if you disregard what they say, you'll be mevazel them, and therefore one needs to accept Das Torah for this reason. However, at least two qualifications need to be advanced with regard to this particular concept in this context. First, there's a limit how much a person is obligated personal community is obligated to sacrifice in terms of its own welfare, advancement and enhancement of its own needs, in order to safeguard, to enhance this kind of comfort. After all, it's an extraneous consideration, in some respects, ultimately not extraneous, but in some respect it is. And that needs to be pitted against other, more intrinsic factors. Mentioned before an analogy between Kveid Tamid Chachomim and Kveid HaMakor and Kibud Avraham. If you got the Kibud Avraham, we know, Poskim mentioned the Marik, the famous Shuvim, that beyond a certain point, the Tzar HaGuf, the question there was, when we got to a Shidduch, the person is mechuyev to listen, his parents insist on a certain Shidduch. And he says, just as other mitzvahs have limits, here also, the certain tzar haguf, of course, the sacrifice is too great, a person is putt. So if this is the reason, not the earlier reason mentioned, simply you're obligated to listen, because they're the authority. But if you say no, in terms of the question of the degree of authority, who's in charge, that does not bind us. But, simply I have to listen to the maaser, because it's best after the chabad. Then there can be a limit. Secondly, presumably, the question of COVID is a function of whether a person made a certain demand, is making a legitimate demand to begin with. Take again the analogy of Kibud Avraham, for all the great importance the concept has in our thought and in our experience, and nothing that I would say now is meant to diminish that, but it has its limits. If unreasonable demands are made, either unreasonable by way of being excessive, or because they're intrusive. They enter into areas which are the daladamis of an individual, and no direct relation or significance to one's parent. Koach of kibud avraham, in that respect, according to the overwhelming majority of the shem, doesn't apply. So who is to mechabit them when they are within their rights and within their limits. But it doesn't mean that the whole of a person's life is totally to be managed in accordance with maybe the desire of his parents. And here again, if the analogy is to be drawn of Kibud Avraham, within the limits of the Talmud. So if one were to conclude that, from that I don't take a stand for the moment, if one were to conclude that certain areas are beyond the pale of the authority of Chachamim, there is no bizayin, the fact that one disregards what they tell you to do, if they had no business telling you to do it in the first place. So, if we are dealing at the absolutely normative level, religious imperative, there's certainly a strong case to be made for not accepting it. And for suggesting that in certain areas which are beyond the purview of the Avichos Keinecho, there's no imperative to accept what they do. But does this mean that the alternative is the second part of the title I begin? An optional Eitz HaTayva. Good advice. At the most, Eitz HaTayva Kamashma. I think that not necessarily so. And it is entirely possible that one may indeed think in terms of Eitz HaTayva as opposed to a normative requirement, and yet genuinely say that it is nevertheless imperative to accept that which is stated. This brings us back to what I mentioned previously, the normative, the two senses of imperative, normative and necessary. We speak of good advice. It's a term. Now, the term good advice, it's a total in the Gemara, appears in different contexts. In certain contexts, it means pragmatic advice. Rav says in Kitten, for instance, Poskin Yemiyon, Natan Mikheras, Levan Yamim Rabim, that shtarets should be placed in some pottery, some earthen vessel, in order they should be able to withstand the onslaught of time. So, according to Roman Dhamma, it's just an Eitz HaTayva if you want to do it. You don't have to. It's pragmatic practice. But, in other respects, in other contexts, the term Eitz HaTayva takes on some moral significance. In a limited way, for instance, the Gemara says, attention, and you're very right. She bore down as to what the term good means. But simply, we're talking about that which is good as it means to a certain purpose. You want to attain it, or it's something that's objective good. And surely, from our point of view, the term tov means not only that which is pleasant, desirable, subjectively speaking, but which is inherently a work. Hazachim Vachis speak of the God of Mother Vachis. Mar says, like the Pasuk, Meshav in Esther, Ben Shloilam, Ebron Averet, Ara Tova Zeb Al Vano, Spazal Se Ara Tov Ze Yerushalayim, Al Vano Ze Mesa Mikdash. So far as it goes. Tov, in Ara Shkof is that which is morally good, spiritually good. That was time, that's Yerushalayim. So, speaking, good advice, it's a table. In what sense is it good? To make money for it? Make life more pleasant? It's that which would spiritually, substantively benefit you. Now, if we're talking about an it's a table in the sense that one is going to get good counsel, let us assume for the moment that it's not a psak as the chuyuv to accept. But you will get advice, you will get guidance, which either personally or communally will be in accordance with certain values, a certain hashkafah, which should be good in the spiritual sense. So one then asks, must he listen? Indeed, there are two courses open to him. One, which perhaps pursues only pragmatic goals. And the other relates to substantive spiritual goals. So can we say that it's not imperative if you listen to the second, you may listen to the first. It's not Basa B'Cholo, it's not Ribis Ksutza, it's not the Ainesa. It's not easy. That we should regard decisions which have moral implications, spiritual implications, as being open to various decisions, because these are halakhically neutral. Obviously, we need to guard against the mode of thought and expression, which relates to halakha in excessively formal and technical terms. Which limits it to a kind of legal discipline. There's a codex, there's an interpretation, there are legates. Our conception of halacha, both of the hashkafa and historically, of course, is one which naturally recognizes the formal legal and technical aspect, but which looks far beyond that. Which looks to the full realization and fulfillment of halacha as an avedas Hashem, in an attempt to realize the will of the Ben Shleilam on earth. That being the case, then there are spiritual implications of many courses of action, and while one might say that there is no direct normative requirement that this figure in authority hands down what you are absolutely obligated to do, but inasmuch as we certainly seek do the right thing, spiritually speaking, in the broader sense. If one assumes that a certain source is going to provide that, provide the right counsel, and if it's a good idea to accept that counsel, it's an eitz hatayva. Why is it good? Because they're giving us the right advice. So can one then say that to seek the right spiritual advice, that this itself is only advising you. That there's no imperative, there's no chiyuv. And if you prefer to get poor advice, stick with it. Is that conceivable? Our whole conception of the spiritual, of the human order, is an integrated one which recognizes on the one hand distinctions and differentiations and mechitzas between the sacred and the profane, Kedish Lechem, but which on the other hand strives to an integrated view of those areas. They are distinct, but they are not disjunct. And beyond that, we have certain overarching categories which relate to the areas of halacha, of the human life, which are not strictly delineated in Shulchan Aruch. The famous Ramban, Roshim Tiyu, the person cannot be a novel of Shusha Torah. It's possible, he says, the person just walks between the categories and the raindrops. It's possible he's a scoundrel with the Torah's license. Someone can manage to walk with the skill and charybdis of various halachas and wind your way through. That's Roshim Tiyu, the man for sanctity. Sacredness, sacred quality in life, is meant to prevent. The concept of doing the right and the good, Yosha Vatov, which the Ramban insists is not just some kind of fancy supererogatory conduct. That's binding punish for everybody. This is a local human shirazadi, which applies as a normative category to areas which have not been strictly set down, which nevertheless have clear moral and spiritual import. And given that perception, we can, on the one hand, certainly insist that there is a difference between Baal Shut and Baal Mitzvah, and assume that in a direct sense, that normative requirement to accept what the Dalai Lama has to say on certain social and political issues, but that doesn't exist. That's only in the realm of narrow halacha. But in another sense, given an integrated perception of life and its challenges, that indeed one should feel that the religious imperative to get the best counsel that he can get in the spiritual realm. Those of you who are familiar with the statement, which I understand the Jewish Observer reprinted translation of long ago, the Rav Zecherner Brachot, with regard to this constant morals of the Das Torah, and it has to be delivered of Chaim Eisel back in 1940, 1941, printed in the title said Sitzva Choshev. There he speaks vigorously, vehemently, that same authorities, the same people, Paschim, with regard to the Pesach Macholo, Mikvari, Zevavin, etc., these are the ones who also make decisions in areas of war, peace, relations with the nations, public policy. And the whole passage is shot through, not with the sense that it's all part of the Parsha Vayetasim. But it's the same people, because it's one reality, it's one marvel of religious reality, which has various components, but which should be viewed in its spirit as an integrated whole. And this presumably introduces an element of the religiously imperative, even if one only has started by saying that it's good counsel. Because presumably, if the person is looking to perfect himself, to mold himself, or if the community is seeking that, religiously or spiritually, it is imperative to get the best counsel possible. And this, of course, becomes to some extent a test, if you will, of the degree of seriousness with which one approaches the spiritual realm, and of the importance which one attaches to coming up with the right answer. Surely, the person we're looking for financial or medical advice, and you were convinced that this doctor, this stockbroker, is the best in the business, would pause to ask, is it imperative to go to him? There's no need to take it to go to him. He would run and look for protection to get there. So, one has access. is convinced that to listen to them is good advice, well, surely it comes down to be good advice. But from the point of view of a person who's engaged in a spiritual quest, essential imperative. I'm very much inclined to accept that point of view. That is not to accept the notion that Varashusbra hardly exists and that everything is really part of the partial way source. That I think is totally erroneous. But the sense that seeking in Eitzah Tova is itself not just a question of advisory elements, but has an imperative thrust. That I think certainly should be our point of view. And to the extent that one views Gdolim as being the repository of that kind of wisdom, the council certainly should be sought. Without getting involved in the Platonic quest for philosopher kings, but within our own Daladak. I think the view of Gdolim as being simply halachic technocrats, legal specialists, this whole thing is unconscionable. Even without getting involved in mystical element, possibly I quoted earlier, Sod Hashem Yireyav Avitolo Odiyav, we viewed, have viewed, and should view Torah as enriching, deepening the whole being. We certainly want to have, in the area of public policy, counsel the word of those who bring to it a spiritual perspective. And we certainly want to have recourse to those of whom it can be said, not only is Arnold said of Burke, he saturates politics with thought, but those who are saturated with terror. That should certainly speak to the committed Jew. Now, of COVID, not a question of COVID. As I said before, in dealing with public issues, many of them are far too critical to be decided on the basis of relatively extraneous factors. But for substantive reasons, to seek the best spiritual counsel. And that certainly has historically especially in Gomes, and very much the traditional tactics. I recall, I was still in the States, still a Talmud, I think, someone who was very keen at the notion of Das Torah, and came to me once in distress. He searched the topic, was looking for the sources where this notion that you must listen to Dolem and several of these issues where it comes up. And he found, the Balatai he found, it ain't there. And he was distressed. He wanted to find it. And more recently, as Lawrence Kaplan has published an article which makes the point, in the wake of an article or two that had been published previously by others, that this is a relatively new concept, late 19th century Poland, early 20th century Germany. In certain respects, the thesis is correct, and yet fundamentally it's not correct. The term didn't exist, and perhaps the kind of normative power that its advocates ascribe to it today also was not present. But the basic idea that a person looks to deal with the guidance, that is certainly part and parcel of the tradition. Now this notion of looking to Das Torah because one does not bifurcate his own life or the life of the community, but is seeking a kind of integrated approach to the secular and the sacred. this should appeal most to what Nazi soil is described, is defined as the Batigoni community. In this country, the modern centrist, the modern Orthodox, whatever you call it. Because what is it that these communities regard as their flagship? Precisely the emphasis on breadth and integration. What is it that they come, what do they charge them with? You Haredim, you are Palestinian people, you are Kerala Mikvayis people. We go out at the front line, we're in the army, we're in industry, we're here, we're there. That's the perception. So, precisely those who most argue that they need to view life whole and to experience it whole, to be the Kaddish, as the Rav Zichron Livracha, as the Kuk Zichron Livracha so much emphasized, the whole of life, they are the ones who should be the first to sense that somehow the Dvar Hashem, the Dvar Torah, should be brought to bear upon the whole of life. Some years back, I was invited to speak to a group of Kibbutz Adati, 10, 15 years ago. And this is one of the issues involved. And I said to them, you know, you people should be the first to be pushing for Masses de Latin. On one hand, you pride yourself on the fact that everything is in some sense sacred, meaning and substance. On the other hand, you regard yourselves as being absolutely committed to Torah, and the voice of Torah is meaningful to you. So if you take these two propositions together, almost syllogistically, you should set up a Mayetzit and not Torah. And I chastise them somewhat for not having them. But why? Why don't they have it? Why doesn't Tzibur, out of which they spring, within which they find themselves, relate to the notion in the same manner that other communities do? And why is the point that I made before, that if it's an Eitz HaTov, it is really essential, imperative, why does that fall on deaf ears? Well, partly, of course, because this community that I'm talking about has a certain emphasis on the individual, on personal responsibility, and the kind of flight from decisions that I mentioned at the outset is an absolute relief to people who are authority-oriented. To others, this is a breakdown of personality. It's a moral fault that a person is looking to lean excessively on others. They cut view is that person needs to confront his sin with his own powers. That's part of it. And the emphasis on the individual, on personal responsibility, this inculcates a reluctance, particularly liberal Western societies, to submit, and provides a sort of philosophic rationale that spiritually to submit, to let others decide, this is debilitating. Primarily, however, I think the reason that there's not this readiness to accept the views which circulate generally today under the rubric of Das Teva is that many people in the community that I'm talking about, sense that the demand for the obeisant acceptance and the current embodiment of Das Torah with regard to a whole plethora of issues related to modern life and culture, that demand is neither one horn of my title, religious imperative, nor the second horn of my title, good advice. It's simply bad advice. Were this community Das Taylor. These are the equivalents of crackerjack doctors and brokers. They still would not be running for them to the same extent others do. The reluctance to submit would still be there, but the readiness to entertain, to listen, to accept would certainly be far greater than it is. And in certain circles, there is some loss of confidence. Many who today issue declamatory ex-cathedra pronouncements under the title of Das Taylor. That loss of confidence is, I suppose, in part, and I hope this is not taken wrongly, it's not meant to be, because some people are not fully convinced that everything which goes of the Kravat of the Das Torah is indeed the product of Gedolei Mamish. And certainly some of the people currently sitting at various Moetzot, whether it's in Eretz Yisrael or here, but no one would confuse them with the Avnei Nezer or the Mechas Chiyuv. And if in a Moetza, on one side, it's Chayim, and Chayim Oizo, now it's with lesser lights, it's not so surprising. Some, the Chametz Chaim would have deferred gladly. Nevertheless, regard, what some of the successors have to say. Now, of course, if one were approaching the issue of Das Taylor in purely normative terms, this oughtn't to be a consideration. This is the Gemara of Rosh Hashanah, Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmuel Bedoro. You cannot romantically, nostalgically look back to a generation ago, two generations, or five generations ago, then there would be a such day, there was such day. Person has to accept the eternal authorities of his generation. But if a person is told to accept this das, not because normative it comes on my sasa, but because it's such wonderful advice, if it's wonderful advice, then you cannot free yourself of it, because you spiritually, you ought to be looking for the best spiritual advice. And of course, to the extent that he feels that the stature of some of those who are issuing it is not equivalent to what he's accustomed to hear, that has an impact. But I think it's primarily not simply a question of the evaluation certain level or another. There are people within the community about which I was speaking previously, Mara, Batiruri, etc., who have a problem with the track record, the historical track record of Das Taylor. To some, this very much relates to Shoah, when, sadly and tragically, many people don't be subscribed to the doctrine, paid with a lives for it. Someone once said to me not long ago, quoted name the Rav Zecheret Macher, quoted the, I mentioned before, I lose the passage of the Rav, that's a Chaim Eizer, but he then backed away somewhat from the concept. Someone said to me that the Rav told him that after the Shoah, he subscribed blindly to constant of Das Taylor, a person must be mad. Now, I understand this, although I must admit, I think it's a bit unfair if one is focused solely upon that issue. Because it's not only David who didn't foresee what would happen at the time. The experts, the specialists, the statesmen, the generals, the politicians, the prime ministers, those sources of alternate authority whom the general community would consult if it were not consulting the Goyim, they did anticipate, they did foresee. So there was one Churchill here or there. follow totally blindly. Something of the aura of presumed infallibility certainly falls. The point, however, is I think Noah, which I repeat, I think is not a fair case, but it's a very painful one. The Shoah is not the only issue. Those who have a problem with the track record of Das Torah see the problem is going back a century, two centuries. Track record of post-emancipation response, coping with a new historical reality. And there are many who feel that in terms of the ability to grapple the kind of public issues, to issue pronouncements, Das Torah, to give clear guidance and direction, the optimal way to relate to this phenomenon, that there were many daily who simply did not sufficiently perceive the dynamics of the scala, secularization, of modern culture and its various ramifications to be able to cope with it. Now, that may be a fair and unfair judgment. The fact of the matter, of course, is that even Eastern Europe, which is held up to us today very often with a kind of romantic nostalgia, as a veritable bastion of total suffusion with Torah and mitzvahs, that was to a great extent being decimated after la guerre during the period between the wars. And the traditional Jewry even there is fighting a defensive and what many thought is at the time of losing back. It may very well be that this had nothing to do with the perception of the pronouncements of David and Das Torah, and that the historical forces at the time were such magnitude and impetus that nothing could have stopped. But surely the perception of many is that at times the leadership, for all its greatness in other areas, Chasna Chalila, not in the slightest impugning that, talking about people that katonim over me masnaya offering tachas kapes chagleya, but nevertheless, in terms of the ability to cope with the phenomenon in question, it was often deficient. What aggravates this concern is the fact that, to a certain extent, this is not an accidental phenomenon, but an endemic one. The situation of David and pronouncements of Das Torah in the modern period, in certain respects, is radically and drastically different from what had historically been the case. Historically, David grew out of a society within which they had organic roots, from whose base they emerged rise to the pinnacle. They had a wide base of support, their tentacles spread in various directions. They came out of that world, they understood that world, they related to it, they had its support, and from the top they provided the leadership, viewing its problems from within. More recent times, for many, the route to produce daily has optimally been viewed as precisely cutting oneself off from the broader community. Insulation, setting the fences higher and higher. So on the one hand, many first-rate Talmidei Chachamim are consciously raised with the sense of the need to maintain a distance from the community. seeking are indeed not grounded in it. On the other hand, the people who are left on the other side of the mechitzas which have been built up, they, because of increasing secularization, are distancing themselves from those who are within. So that to a great extent, the future gedolim, the potential gedolim, are being raised to move in one direction. The rest of the community, at least, not the majority of the community, but much of the general community, with respect to whom decisions of Adas Torah need to be made, they are moving in the other direction. And the gaps really often are very, very significant. So there is almost a mentality, in many cases, which cherishes this relation. But even without that, there is the reality of a certain value. Add to this the fact, of course, for many of those idealization of maintaining total commitment purely to Talmud Torah in order to produce Talmud, so that the broader cultural ambience also is unfamiliar. The difficulties of being able to understand the world with respect to which one is then expected to make pronouncements becomes palpable. Add to this effect that the very substance of modern culture, inherently, without question of how one relates to Gedolim, is an increasing complexity. Marx and others, of course, dealt with this. It's an increasingly interactive and complex reality, which in order to understand, one needs not to engage less, but more than at previous times, in studying it and analyzing it. Little wonder then, in many cases, those who consciously sought to try to avoid that, and this is literally more of a problem as it's well been here, often find it difficult to understand what's around them. And sometimes, very problematic results. This is aggravated by an additional factor. At times, in relation to some of these areas, maybe first rate Tamid Chachamim, but who, by virtue of the fact that the grasp of the overall cultural reality is limited, don't even have a sense of the limitations. Don't fully perceive what are the kinds of issues that they can address themselves to responsibly with knowledge, and which they have better leave aside. I think our sense of the moral spiritual greatness of Gedolim is such that we take it for granted. Where they're dealing with issues which they think are beyond their capacity to handle, they would say so. I would be afraid. But as I've said in many instances, awareness of the complexity is not fully internalized. I think that was part of the sense which Rav Zichron Livracha had another statement made in the Rebbe's decision in 1967, shortly after the Six-Day War. He spoke to the Chief Chumakim himself, Rabbanim, and then addressed himself, this is of course our subject here, but addressed himself the question of Shalom to Rav Shtachim, the term territories and so on, took a very strong stand in favor of returning, he said, he's fully aware of Kushas Eretz Yisrael and was brought up on it, and it's very close and dear to him, but nevertheless, the Pekuach Nefesh, etc., is taken. And then he went on to say, in regard to these issues, because at that time, certain Rabbani Min Eretz Yisrael were making pronouncements, in regard to these issues, he said categorically, don't ask Rabbani, ask people who have expertise, military area, diplomatic area, understand the reality on the ground. It sense that he felt that there were people who were perhaps out of their own passion committed to Israel, a very positive thing in its own right, but were not fully sufficiently aware of their own limitations in dealing with certain complex issues. There is a further difficulty here in regard to the ability to relate to Das Torah in its present embodiment. Many of its proponents like to speak in sort of uniform Das Torah. The Das Torah. And suppose that A, they generally assume this to be the case. B, that they find themselves almost driven to gain greater acceptance of a particular pronouncement by the extent to which it can be presented as being virtually unanimous consensual. And this is partly reflection, this is again discussion for another occasion, a certain tendency to present issues of Ashkofe as being unitary, or only one mind, even amongst people who in areas of halacha thrive on machlekes. And this is something which people who sense that it's not the case, there are different views in regard to areas of Ashkofe as well, find it difficult to accept. After all, it's not the world that they recognize, not the world that they perceive. That's a problem. Last year, went to Sir Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and I asked the following question. Several years ago, I was asked to join a certain forum. I had heard that Shlomo Zalman had certain reservations about it, and that he had told someone, a friend of mine, he thought he should not join the forum. So I went to consult him. I wanted to hear what he had. So he was walking with him, walking up the steps, and I saw he was a little bit annoyed that I had asked him. He said, "This is not question of halacha. Let these areas, everyone can do as he understands. Do as you understand." So I said, "Well, but I understood that you had told a certain person not to." So listen, he's a Talmud of mine, so I told him, he asked, you do what you want. It's not a question of halacha. Went back to last year, and I didn't know whether this was simply a moment of pique, or wanted to, didn't want to answer the question that this is a position he had presented. So I went back and I said to him, was that your fully articulated position? And he said, yes, indeed. And he then quoted to me a pasuk, a reminder of the vaults, it was quoted in another context. It's the pasuk, "Chuvanim shimuli yirat Hashem al amechem." He said to someone, asked, "Where's the chuvanim shimuli? Go, my sons, listen to me." He said, "Come, my sons, listen to me." I go. He said, "Kuvanim, gatekindlers, go each own way as you understand, go that way, I will instruct you from afar." But then, of course, Tech the Dibu, he didn't want to be misunderstood. He said, "Of course, I've only told him what's Yiras Hashem, that something is off me." So, his perspective, the recognition that there can be a kind of multiple Das Torah was clear. But many, of course, like to speak with a much stronger force of authority, bang the gavel on the table, and this is something which sometimes elicits a negative response. Now this response, this recoil to some extent from many contemporary expressions of Das Torah, the factors that I mentioned. And hence, speaking for myself, I find myself in a bit of a quandary. Emotionally, psychologically, I feel very much committed to the sense of the importance of Das Teva and recourse to it as being an Eitz Teva, which we ignore on our parents, which we really ought to consult. And I say again, not out of the way so, but to the extent that one is convinced that one is dealing with Dunim, we're providing clear, sound advice, that one should heed it. Justice Jackson, as the Supreme Court, sat in the middle of the century, once said about the Supreme Court, he said, we're not final because we are right. We are right because we are final. And with regard to the area, of course, with regard to Chazal, we assume both are correct. They are for us right because they are final, the arbiters of the content of Torah, and final in the sense because they are right. Their greatness is that which is placed at the very center of our historical experience. But with regard to this particular issue, I think it's divorced from Lysosim. I believe, as indicated previously, that this sense of right because final at most exists within the context of Shalom Yichon Yagedo. But, on the other hand, the sense that really Israel, the repositories of Torah v'Chochmah, suffused and pervaded by Tveikus in Torah, that these, for us in a certain sense, need to be in some sense final because right, their advice to be heeded because it grows out of the world so richly and deeply rooted in Torah, that is something which I say I'm emotionally and ashkafically very strongly attracted. So, even if I don't speak without the common shoes of the final, in the fullest sense, but at least penalty. So this on the one hand. And yet, and here's where my quandary comes up, I don't find that I can really harness myself and my judgment fully, confidently, to the star of the many of the current spokesmen for Das Teva. Some of the people who are the incarnation of current Das Teva find some of the pronouncements, sometimes a small matter, sometimes a great matter, not only problematic, but disastrous. You laugh, I wish it were not so. Take this example, I say again, Chas v'Chalil, a lot of lack of respect, but when people think today of Das Teva, a particular individual, more than anyone else, they think of the problem of Rosh Hashanah. And the Talmud Chacham of the first rank in the Sefer is well known, but on various occasions, the pronouncements have been such. Two or three years ago, he had the whole country, the whole Jewish world, in the palm of his hand, waiting to hear what he would have to say, this party, that party, in a moment which could have inspired the whole nation, was reduced to old Cheshbainus will keep it seen 50 years ago. So, there is something for many of us, even those who, like myself, are genuinely very sympathetic, but acts, the notion of Das Teva as a concept, some difficulty in its current implementation. Yet I think it's rather important even if that be the case, and even if sometimes we react to exaggerated claims that are made for the concept, we find ourselves unable to respond positively to some of its present manifestations. We'll be very careful not to throw out the baby with the bathwater. I think first, we need to recognize the principle. Recognize the fact that, at the very least, at a consultative level, in terms of hearing of you, getting a perspective, at the very least, be very much part of the picture. Certainly, one is dealing with matters of principle. There's a certain distinction here, of course, between moral and spiritual elements and practical judgments. I'll just take one example. Back in the 60s, it was called the SSSJ, the Student Strike of Soviet Jury, was first taken off with the initial protests. Then there was difference of opinion as to whether it was a good idea. And some of the younger or activist elements in the community thought that one needed to do this, and some of the older leadership, the conservative, it's gas, etc., etc. But then there were two issues on the table. One was an evaluation of what would be the long-range implications of that kind of protest. How would the big bear eventually respond? That was one thing. Then was a question of a different nature, assuming that perhaps there might be long-term benefits, but at the cost of short-term harm, turning one or two additional turns of the screw in Soviet Jewry dead in Russia, should one not engage in that kind of thing? The second matter, the question of principle. That surely should be asked of Berlin with their own moral and spiritual sensibility. The first, perhaps Marshall Golden would be a better answer. Something of the same is felt by many, this distinction with regard to the issues that are so much in our minds and our hearts today, about Israel, so much anxiety. Anxiety on the one hand, hope on the other hand. And again, we are confronted with two different kinds of issues. One issue is whether the principle Shalom Tmurat Shtachim can or cannot be countenanced. The other, the question of evaluating, is whether indeed the Shalom will be attained by the kind of arrangements that are being suggested. So even those who feel that perhaps it's not the task of coming to lecture the Prime Minister and Chief of Staff on military realities, very much recognize that fundamental issues in principle are those on which at least the counsel needs to be heard, a voice needs to be absorbed. So first, I think that at the very least at a consultative level, the principle should be accepted. And here we have sometimes within the that Tidum community is sort of anomaly. Times, since Klaimosh, they are subject to the authority, very less so, but last couple of decades, the Rabbanut HaRashit, so they cannot deviate from what the Rabbanut HaRashit tells them. On the other hand, they want to deviate. They don't ask. The result very often is that in as much as this facade of covenant exists, so they can inquire every professor, every newspaper reporter, every baker, every shoemaker. Clearly they can't ask. Then how can you not do what they tell you? And certainly there needs to be recognition, both within the community and the part of the area, that there can be, within elements of the finest brown shoes, the possibility of consulting, and yet, perhaps ultimately of deciding otherwise. Second, part of recognizing the principle, even the community which does not wholly subscribe to the Asteira, because it finds itself out of consonance with statements made by many who taken the flag of the Asteira and held it high, at the very least let that community consult people who do have some degree of breadth in relation to the currency, and able to express themselves in relation to that. Thirdly, this community, as perhaps the material world as a whole, needs to do more, to strive more. Try to overcome some of that gap that I described earlier, to develop a greater sense of interaction, understanding, and perception between Badim Tamid Chachomim and Kriya Tamid Chachomim and the community around me. This, I think, is a felt need for other reasons as well, but particularly so if the ability to bring to bear Das Torah the Bible way on a wide range of problems, whatever sort, confront us at the level of public policy and social policy, if that is to take place. So if I'm asked in Cleveland, do I think it's a religious imperative, it's a good advice, I think, as I said previously, at least the level of seeking counsel, find advice, it's imperative to find it. But it rests upon us the responsibility to see to it that indeed our lights have the capacity, in terms of the entire breadth, to provide the kind of guidance which is so necessary in a difficult